Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Soccer matters. Fabregas,
Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside. Spain score.
Entonces el centro remate del gol. Gol de oro. Gol de oro. Gol de Oribe.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. And tonight, we continue on. Presenting sponsor is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. Don't forget, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they'll take your case. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. And look, support the sponsors that support Soccer Talk on the radio. Next guest is a great one. Director of Player Personnel. He's a former professional soccer player, played over 30 times for the United States, played in Germany, was a part of Bob Gansler's staff when Kansas City won the MLS Cup. Kind of a behind-the-scenes guy, but a guy that has seen pretty much all of it through his lens. He's Brian Bliss. He joins us now. Brian, thank you very much for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Well, it's always a pleasure getting someone like yourself on here. Before we get into your career and your lens looking at Major League Soccer and all the different areas you've been involved, just for Houston Dynamo fans, you have worked closely with Paulo Nagamura. He is the new coach down here in Houston, coming out of the Sporting Kansas City culture. What can you tell my listeners about Paulo Nagamura?
Yeah, look, I had the pleasure of working with him, as he was transitioning from being a player into the coaching staff when we hired him as an assistant on the B team, and then obviously took over as the head guy. So he's got some experience, but he's also, probably got some question marks around the experience, like anybody would as a player or as a coach. So, that being said, Paulo as a player and even as a coach is ultra competitive, right? He loves to win, right? And also hates to lose. So, he's ultra competitive. He will put a shift in and turn over every rock, to solve an issue, to create a better, mousetrap, let's say. And you're never going to think that he's cut a corner or taken a day off or something like that, because he's going to put the work in. Now, whether he gets the results, he'll tell you the same thing. He doesn't even know that, but he's going to die trying for sure, because of his competitive nature. And that's the type of guy you're getting.
He's Brian Bliss, director of player personnel, Sporting Kansas City. Was an excellent player in his day. Also played at the Columbus Crew and the Metro Stars in New York, if you do remember that. Brian, if you look at players, you're always looking for that one thing that jumps out. What might that be with Paulo Nagamura, outside of the competitive side, which we all know?
Probably a little bit of the mentality, mental toughness, right? And I think Naga can take a lot on and internalize, because look, these B team jobs at the MLS level, they're never, really what you want them to be, because you want to win all the time. And there's a little bit more angled towards development. And sometimes you take your lumps in that process. And I think, Naga can take a lot of heat, and he can take a lot of, I don't want to say losses, but he can take that on and absorb that in behalf of maybe the club. So he's lack of a better term, he's pretty tough,
Brian, the step from being a USL coach and at that level to now coming to Major League Soccer and dealing with pros that have had long-term contracts that are hardened, is that something he'll be ready for? Did he get enough of that down there? Because it's a totally different environment.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And look, you're going to learn somewhere. We always say, you know, well, why don't you play that player? Well, he's not ready. Well, why don't you use that coach? Well, he's not ready. How do you know until you're in that environment? But I think, you know, there's where Paulo's probably going to have the biggest, let's say, learning curve will be on the, let's call it player management side. As you said, you know, you're dealing with, you know, probably a lot of guys that are 25 to 35 rather than, you know, 18 to 22. And their lives, their paychecks, their off the field stuff is a lot different, than some of these B team guys or USL guys. So that will be a learning curve for him for sure. And, you know, I think if he can build his staff to help, help him in that area, I think he'll be okay. But like you said, it's a different animal altogether for sure. And, you know, I think at least he's been in those shoes, right? So he has his own experiences being that player himself at a high level in the MLS, dealing with all the things that, let's say, a grown man with a family has. That maybe the USL guys don't. He can draw on that.
Brian Bliss joining us. He's a director of player personnel, Sporting Kansas City. Fantastic playing career in the beginning. Played at Southern Connecticut State as well on the East Coast. Brian, from a tactical perspective and a purpose of play, Sporting Kansas City is one of the most defined teams in the league. The way you guys play, I think that's pretty fair to say, at least from my perspective, and I think many others as well. Is that something that you expect him to carry over here in Houston, even without looking at the roster down here?
Yeah, look, I mean, he's been in that system as a player at Sporting here. He's been in that system, let's say, as an assistant coach and 3 years of a head coach. I'm not saying he would follow day to day the regiment of the first team, but he certainly has a good foundation in those areas of playing assistant and head, you know, to have that system or style of play that will, you know, probably carry with him. Now, is he capable of changing and adapting? I'm assuming he is because you may not have the personnel to do it. And you're going to have to adapt to what you got and what you think you might be getting in the next window. So I think Paul is smart enough and been around enough that he knows that he can't be married to one system and it's either this or fail. I think he's open-minded enough to be flexible to know that he's going to maybe have to change depending on the type of players he has and what he can acquire in this offseason. So I think one of Paul's strengths would be, you know, he's collaborative and he'll be adaptive.
Brian Bliss is joining us. Brian, you've seen it all. I mean, one of the things they're trying to do down here in Houston and need to do is change a culture. Sporting Kansas City has a culture. You've been a part of that. Carrie's a Wagner. I mean, we can go on, led by Peter. It really is remarkable and very impressive. Talk about culture, identity, and how that kind of gets built and how all of you guys work together on that, including with the front office.
Yeah, look, everybody else says, well, I'm going to change the culture. Yeah, it's not easy, right? Because changing culture or establishing culture takes time. You know, and I know Peter, when he set out 13 years ago to establish culture, it didn't happen in 2 years. It took, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to get that where you've changed some personnel out. You've established a regiment. You've established, let's say, I don't want to say rules, but you established a way of doing things that slowly became your culture, right? So it takes time. And sometimes, you know, Peter or whoever happens to be at the top of the food chain, you know, has to make some hard decisions that may be detrimental to the group, but in the long run are going to help set the tone for that culture. And it's not an easy thing to establish. It takes time. Peter's done a fantastic job. And obviously his tenure here shows that he's been given that leeway. He's established it. He's still building on it on a yearly basis. And now it's kind of in place and guys fall in line.
Brian Bliss joining us. Brian, MLS through your lens, how has it changed? You and I were talking before we got on the air here to do this interview, and you had a really, really good synopsis. Just bring that to my listeners.
Yeah, look, we were talking earlier that, you know, when the league started in 96, you know, myself and a few other guys that were playing overseas were, let's call them the featured players at the time who came back as maybe some national team players or guys playing overseas to join the league. That was made up of some holdovers from the ASL and USL at the time. I think there might have been two leagues going on at that time. It was made up of college players, and that was how it got started. And then 2-3 years later, you know, most of the transfers incoming were transfer free, coming out of the Caribbean, coming out of the Central American countries. And most of the teams had 2 to 3 to 4 guys like that in their roster. And those were the guys that were taking up the foreign spots. And then, you know, you get the new Beckham rule and you get Tam and all that. And slowly those guys eventually got pushed out of the league just because you had more readily available funds that now, you know, you're kind of bypassing the Caribbean market and the Central American market, and you're going straight to Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, you know, and even pulling guys from Europe. So it kind of squeezed that guy out of the league, and all those players now tend to be in the USL. And I'm not saying that there's not quality in the Caribbean countries or Central American countries. It's just a matter of fact that when you have more money at your hands to acquire players, you're going to probably go seek what you would think is a better ready-made available player, and those are in those other markets. And that's how the leagues change. It's almost, it's unfortunate, but it's the maturation.
Brian Bliss, he's a director of player personnel for Sporting Kansas City. What's your job description? Because we hear sporting director, technical director, director of player personnel, and I know the teams do it very, very differently, the teams at the top of the league to the teams at the bottom. In fact, this is the first time the Dynamo are going to have a technical director to show you how much of a catch-up game they've been playing. Tell us a little bit about your job and what it entails.
Yeah, look, I mean, you like to say Peter has a couple of assistant coaches on the field. I'm like his assistant coach off the field. And I deal with everything. You know, it's management of the cap, dealing with anything that goes on at the league as a liaison between them, negotiate the players' contracts, and manage that cap usage, prepare documents to show our ownership group, you know, how and why we're spending our money where, you know, trying to think, scouting. We have three or four scouts underneath us that I manage in terms of funneling players up and trying to, you know, determine who are the best three or four guys we could get in any position that we're looking for, and present that to Peter and the coaching staff as to why I believe this is the right guy or these three guys are the best three and the monies that fit the bill. And then, you know, obviously helping manage that B team in terms of the day-to-day management of that group, the roster of that team, that budget, that salary structure with those guys. So it's a little bit of everything that I do. And, you know, you could obviously say it's more in tune with what a sporting director does. I just don't have that title. Peter has that, which is fine. And we've talked about it several times. I'm not so much into titles. As long as I know what my contribution is, I know what I'm doing for the club. As long as that fits and the compensation fits, I don't really care what the title is.
Brian, I think you have a real job. That's an unbelievable job description. But you know what? I love this for my listeners and anybody who's tuning into this, because I think that's a very nebulous area. And the way you described all the responsibilities that you have and the purpose of your job, pretty incredible. So thank you for that. I'm just sitting here going, this is tremendous education, not only for me, but also for people that are listening into the show, because I think it is a very nebulous title sometimes, yeah. And people don't really know exactly what people are doing. Last thing before I let you go, and you played in Germany as well, and I want to get that across to my listeners, but you also were very influenced by Bob Gansler. Just a nod to the legendary Bob Gansler right now.
Yeah, look, I mean, he was a mentor of mine. Obviously, I played for him for about 2.5-3 years with the national teams programs. He took over the national teams just as we were transitioning from that 88 Olympic team to the 90 World Cup team, and he took it over. And I was able to, you know, play for him for about 2.5-3 years. And then, you know, we went our own ways, and we reconnected again when he asked me to be part of his staff here in 2000 when it was called the Wizards. You know, so I worked with him as an assistant coach for 5 years, learned a lot from him on a management standpoint, on a training preparation standpoint, on a, let's call it, roster building and personality standpoint. So I owe a lot to him, and as well as a lot of guys in my era owe a lot to Bob, because he helped a lot of us. Right. And, you know, I was able to then take over when he stepped aside in 06, I think. But I still keep in contact with him on a regular basis. He's back up in Milwaukee with his wife and, you know, living the retirement thing and visiting grandkids outside of the pandemic. So yeah, I still keep in contact with him. And like I said, I would always consider him a mentor, and not only that, a good friend as well.
All right. Being with the Wizards, and that's where I was cutting my teeth back in the day. We talked about this as well as a commentator. Remember the games at Arrowhead Stadium, and life was different than the transition to a minor league ballpark. Did you ever dream it was going to be like this? I mean, when I watch games from Sporting Kansas City, I'm just like, somebody dropped me in that stadium.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, right? It was, I don't want to say it was one of the best ones at the time, but I mean, look, Columbus Crew obviously you know, put their mark in the ground with the old stadium there, and it kind of ran its course. And then, you know, a few other teams started popping up with their own specific stadiums, whether it was FC Dallas or maybe Colorado Rapids. But then when these guys built this stadium, you know, it kind of, you know, set the bar. And now when we go to Minnesota, we go to LAFC. I have yet to be in Austin's or Cincinnati's new stadiums, but from what I hear, those stadiums are even trumping ours. And what they've put into them and expenses and amenities and all that. So, you know, you like you said, you can't imagine it that the significant changes have taken place over the history of this league. And look, it's almost like an arms race now. It's not only stadiums, it's training grounds, right? And everybody's in an arms race, and everybody wants to do it better, which is great for everybody.
Brian, I want to thank you very much. This is a tremendous interview. I really mean that. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for spending the time. You're being so candid as well. Always continued success for you. You're one of the guys who's helped build the sport in this country. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Great. Thanks, Glenn, for having me. I appreciate it. And keep up the good work, because your voice in the game over the decades has been one that we all are aware of and very comfortable with.
Very kind of you. Thank you, Brian. Thank that's you. Brian Bliss. Nothing better than that interview right there. And I hope you enjoy that listening in. All right. That's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the Best in Soccer Talk. Your opinion always wanted, and the fact that you're listening into this and on the podcast at ESPN975.com. Checking us out on Twitter at Soccer Matters GD, at Glenn Davis Sock. Same thing on Instagram and or at Facebook Soccer Matters. We appreciate it. Any support you can give us with likes and comments, it does go a long way. And supporting our sponsors, including Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get down to Advantage BMW in Midtown. They'll get you in one of these tremendous BMWs, whether it's a sedan, whether it's an SUV type. Get down there, talk to Justin, talk to Steven. Great sponsors, Advantage BMW Midtown of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. They'll take you from sales right into that vehicle. You get all the great service and all the great customer attention that you will deserve. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. Now, let's go to the general manager of the Houston Dynamo, Pat Onstad.
Well, Pat, obviously a big day announcing Paulo Nagamura as the next coach. As I looked up there on the podium, you did seem very relieved. You also seemed very excited.
Yeah, I was, and on both fronts. I mean, it's a long process. You speak to a lot of people. And you and I had gone into this a little bit last week, I believe, was you really get an understanding. The more people you speak to, you get a really clear picture of exactly what you're looking for. And so part of this whole process, I think, is timing. And Paulo came at the exact time when we're like, this is the type of profile we need. And someone asked in the press conference, I'm not sure who it was, but it was a good question, saying, like, when did you know? And realistically, it was after the first phone call with him. I know Asher Mendelsohn had spoken to him a little bit one-on-one. You know, Nick Koba knows him pretty well from his history in the league. And then for myself, I obviously played against him and knew who he was and knew he was a competitive guy. But when I spoke to him on that Zoom call, first thing it is, he got off, and I remember calling both Asher and Nick and saying, I really like this guy. This guy could be the perfect fit for what we're looking for. And from there, you know, he just continued to impress as we moved along the process.
All right. With your soccer operations staff, which you just said, Nick Koba, Asher Mendelsohn now, and of course the head coach, Paulo Nagamura, this is kind of the example of collaboration that you have mentioned to the fan base.
Yeah, and I would add Paul Caffrey into it as a, you know, a head of performance here. So it was kind of the five of us. That's the way I'm seeing it at this point in time. I could see us adding another one depending how things go. But at the end of the day, I think it's important that we all have our say in where we go. Listen, in the end, I'm the decision maker. I'll make the final call. But the last thing I want to do is just, you know, unilaterally make decisions in this club. I don't think that's how you bring a group around, change culture. That's a dictatorship, and it's certainly never anything that I've seen be successful in our league. I think the best ones, even Dominic Kinnear, for example, who did at times rule with an iron fist. He still would grab the older guys once in a while, pull them aside, ask their opinions, get his staff to talk to the other players. And he knew how to do it. He knew how to use everybody. And it was a collaborative affair with him as well. So I think those are the type of coaches, those are the type of environments that where you can be successful.
Do you guys, does Paulo understand the year? I mean, are you able to understand the years of consistently not succeeding and not being relevant here? That's the only thing I, from the outside, I look in, and sometimes even the national media doesn't understand how beaten down the fans have been and how beaten down, and I'm trying to be very respectful here, this is, because in order to go forward, you got to know where you are.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's probably one of the reasons why I got the job. Because I followed the team, I left, and my heart was broken when I left. I wanted to stay. I wanted to find a position in the organization. This is no knock on Chris Kennedy. I think Chris wanted to find something for me, but that was back in the day where that just didn't happen. You know, players finished their careers and then they had to go find work somewhere else. And whether it, very, very few continued in the game too. So I think that's changing, and I want to continue to make that change here and try to embrace, ex players and stuff within our club. So that's one thing, but I always followed the club. I always looked them and saw where they were at. When Matt Jordan was hired, you know, Chris had reached out to Columbus and asked to speak to me. So there always been, I'd always had one eye on them and just kind of how they were. And of course, it still kind of hurt me. It was my club. You know, it was a club that I felt I play along with, you know, the Brian Mullins, Craig Weibels, Brian Chings, you know, Dwayne DeRozier. A lot of guys helped build to become a strong team. But I felt a part of that group, and so I think I have a good idea. Does Paulo have that same attachment? Of course not. But the one thing he does remember, because he played at Chivas, you know, he played at Kansas City, is he remembers the competitiveness of our group. And he knew what it was like to play our group. He knew how difficult it was, especially when he came to Houston. And he's you know, one of his things he kept asking is, like, what happened? Like, what happened to that group? Like, it just doesn't have that same feel. So I think he understands it. I don't think he's as close to it as obviously I am. But at the end of the day, to your point, I 100% agree with you. If you don't understand your history and you don't understand what's happened to this club, it is difficult to move forward. And the one thing I was impressed with, because he wasn't prompted, this was I actually didn't jump in until maybe about 45 minutes before the press conference. And I was more writing about kind of my introduction, making sure I got the points I wanted to get across. So I didn't really talk to Paulo much before, but I liked how he talked. He did. He talked about turning this thing around and getting back to the way when it was a difficult place to play. So to me, he understands the history of it. He hasn't lived it, but at the end of the day, for him having that understanding without being prompted, without us really talking about it in detail, is good. But that's one of the reasons that attracted me to him. He gets it. He understands. He realizes where we're at as a club, and he wants to make this thing better, and he's excited about the project.
Talking to Pat Onstad, general manager of Houston Dynamo, Paulo Nagamura has been named the head coach, as we obviously know. And before we get into him a little bit more, let's just go back to something you just said a second ago about, you know, changing that culture and that identity. And that's something you're going to want also with the front office. I mean, you come from the Columbus Crew, where it's a very tight knit group. Sporting Kansas City, the front office is very in tune with the competitive side of the thing. How is that going to change? Who's going to initiate a lot of that change? Because you can't do everything. I'm assuming John Walker will have a big piece in that. But how do you interface all this? Because, and that's before we even begin to talk about the Houston soccer community. It's a lot of pieces that got to come together. It can't happen all at once.
No, I agree.
Mesh the business and the competitive side.
I agree with you. I mean, first and foremost, and this is the reality. The reality is that we're in two separate areas, separated by about 12 to 15 miles. So right off the bat, you're up against it to a certain extent. One thing I'm starting to be able to do now is I'm starting to get in the office. I was in the office today, had a meeting with John in his office. So I'm physically down there. So there's a physical presence from our group here down there. And I think one of your points, I think where you're getting to with this question a little bit is, you know, hiring of a technical director, which will help here in this building, HSP. But that frees me up now to go down there. So Asher Mendelson, who's been hired as a technical director, a guy I worked with in Columbus for 5 years, has worked in the league in various projects, most recently pretty much running MLS Next and getting that off the ground. So he's a guy I really trust and a guy that's a really great thinker, brown educated. He's the smart one in the room. So it's nice to have him, but he's the guy, hopefully, that will free me up to be able to start making that connection with the front office so we can actually kind of join forces and start moving in the same direction. And a lot of it is communication. I think, any successful organization at any level, whether it's Apple, IBM, or, well, maybe IBM is a bad example at this same age, but a good that's showing my age a little bit. But these organizations, Tesla, whatever, it's all about communication. And if you're not communicating, and to me, it needs to be physical as well. You need to be in a room and speaking to one another. So that's something we need to improve in our club to be able to improve our culture. So I need to be able to share, hey, this is what we're doing here at HSP. This is let's see what we're doing down the office. And I may be completely, I don't know what's going on down there. So I'm trying to learn. You know, John's educating today. We had a great conversation for an hour, and he's educating me on what's been happening there down in that building. So we're trying to become, as we say, one club, but it's difficult when you're that separate. So you've got to make an effort to bring people together. And I think that's what both John and I want to do. And I think, you know, bringing in an Asher Mendelson, giving Nick Koba a little more leeway to do a little more work, you know, asking Paul Caffrey to pull up his sleeves, getting Paulo involved. I think that helps free up my time to kind of now help John as well, and vice versa for John to help me. So I think that's a part of it. Now, you said the community, that's a totally different discussion and probably a different show, but you're 100% correct. I think there are a ton of bridges that need to be mended. And if not even mended, just even started to get built, I think, in some areas. But, you know, it is a work in progress. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. I would love to say, like, tomorrow, snap my fingers and everything's, you know, perfect for us, but it's not. We're going to have to work at it, and it's going to take time. And I think the biggest thing is we have to be open to criticism and to listen to it, and then try to use that to drive our culture and our beliefs and how we want to interact with the soccer community in Houston. And that's so important. I mean, it's an enormous task, but I think it's something that I'm really excited about the challenge.
Pat Onstad, Dynamo General Manager, joining us. I want to go back to something you just said about ex-players, because Eddie Robinson has done some coaching on the Dash side, also in the academy in the past. Corey Ash is doing some great work on the women's NWSL side with the Dash. Right down the street from you guys is a place and a building that was refurbished by a guy named Alex Woods. His number two man, right up near the top, is a guy you know very well. His name is Wade Barrett. He was the captain of the Houston Dynamo. So this building is literally two blocks away. Is this the kind of thing you're talking about, going over there, talking to these guys and establishing some kind of relationship? Because you win on twofold. You got Wade Barrett there, and you've also got a kid who grew up in Houston playing, went on to play, you know, college soccer, went on to the pros, and Alex Woods was on the Dallas roster as well.
Yeah, and I haven't met him before, but Wade spoke very highly of him and enjoys working with him. And they built up a really good business there. And I think, you know, they went through a little bit of tough times through COVID, but they've turned it around and done a fantastic job. So Wade and I have touched base a couple of times since I've been here, but not as much as I would have liked. He was, for those who are Dynamo fans, we were roommates on the road. He still calls me roomie to this day. I don't think he's used my first name since we started rooming together on the road. So
you'll respond to roomie if I call you roomie?
Well, maybe not from you, but from Wade.
You're Dynamo General Manager.
Wade, no problem. Right away, I know it's Wade. And he's just a fantastic individual, as everyone knows here. And he put a lot into this club and into the soccer in the city, still does. So he's a guy, definitely. And that's not even low-hanging fruit. I think he's already served the fruit up for me, so. I'm excited.
I mean, that's to me is creating a culture also, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've let so many good guys go, right? Like yourself in the beginning, like Craig Weibel. I mean, we could go on and on from current players, but then you can go to all the kids that grew up here and went into MLS. So a guy like Eric Quill, it pains me to see him being an assistant coach in Columbus when I know he should be a part of the Houston Dynamo, right?
Yeah.
Josh Gardner has been at Sporting Kansas City coaching kids in the community. Aren't these the kind of guys also that you want with Houston roots that have been here grew up here? Do you want them to be a part of it?
I think you want to bring as many as you can in, but you also want to bring in good people, without a doubt.
Got to be qualified. No gimmies. No gimmies.
And I do think, listen, those guys are examples of guys that are already doing it in other clubs, right? But I do find at times you talk to ex-pros, And some of them are like, oh, yeah, I think this would be a fantastic. I could do that. I could be the GM. I'm like, OK, but what have you been doing since? I've been out for a couple of runs and playing some golf. I go, well, how does that qualify you to be a general manager? So I do think you have to be careful. The examples you're using are perfect examples. These are guys, you know, Alex, who's gone and started his own successful business. You know, Josh Garner, who's working and you've been coaching now for. Gosh, I can't believe he's retired that long, probably over 10 years now. So there's a lot of guys, you know, Corey Ash, who's now in our club, which is great, who's done some work and stuff. So there are people out there that definitely have done it and done the work and done the groundwork who deserve an opportunity. And that's when jobs open up, that's what we should be looking at. And I know we've just got a diversity hire with the league, which is an excellent program and an excellent way to try to give opportunities to people that aren't getting the opportunities they deserve. I think it should almost be the same way for us at the club, and it's something we could, you know, we should discuss and talk about. But can you have that almost same policy in place when you're trying to hire? Hey, listen, if we have a job open here, we should at least interview one ex player for that job and try to see what we can do. So all those doesn't mean you're going to hire the person because maybe they're not the most qualified, but at least if you're reaching out and giving them opportunity, it may be, hey, you know what, Josh, we have a U-17 position open, but you know what, he might be better served getting into community relations or something like that as you go through the interview process. So a lot of it is about opportunity. And the other thing for me that I think we've really missed in the whole league has, for example, is just not helping players before they retire. I think these programs of going out and saying, okay, where do you want to go? How do you want to do it? Outside of coaching, which is almost every player wants to be a coach, but that outside of that, no one has really ever helped these guys, these players get prepared for life after soccer. Like I had no idea how to get into the general manager business. It was kind of threw in my lap. It was more about coaching. But at that stage, I knew when in my coaching career, like I needed a change and it worked out perfect for me. But I'm lucky. The timing was right and right place at the right time. And is there a possibility that you can sit there and as a player is winding down, he has a program or something that he can go say, okay, listen, I still want to stay in the game. What are the jobs available? What are the areas? Let me see what it looks like. And then at least that person can say, you know what? I'm going to once a week, I'm going to go spend 2 hours in the front office in ticket sales. I want to be a salesman. Okay, I'm going to try it. You might say it's not for him, but at least you find out rather than retiring. And then now you're scrambling for a paycheck to try to make ends meet. And what happens is guys all of a sudden just fall out of the game because they need a job and they find the first job they can get.
All right, so that was part one of Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. I want to remind you about Advantage BMW in Midtown. You get down there, you can get into all kinds of vehicles, pre-owned, certified, you name it. They've got all different styles down there. You get yourself in the ultimate driving machine. You can give them a call at 855-219-3327. The guy to ask for down there is either Justin or Steven. Justin or Steven down at Advantage BMW Midtown. They've been great supporters of our show. We've done a couple of live gigs from down there. We're hoping to do that in the new year. Go down there, get yourself in a 535i, a 328i, an X3, an X5, a 528i, or even go to the 7 Series. It's all you need. Get down to Advantage BMW for all your automotive needs. They are ready to please you. That's Advantage BMW in Midtown. We'll take a break. We'll come back with part two of Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We always thank you for tuning in. Just a quick reminder here, you get the podcast of this show at ESPN975.com. Don't forget our sister show in Austin on the Horn, hornfm.com for podcasts up there. Did a great interview this week with their captain, Alexander Ring. Also, don't forget to hit me up on Twitter, at Soccer Matters GD, at Glenn Davis Soc. Same thing on Instagram, Facebook Soccer Matters. And if you want to learn a little bit more about me, you go to glenndavissoccer.com. All right, there's that shameless promotion. Here is part two of Houston Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Pat Onstad, Dynamo General Manager, joining us here. And yeah, I just think that's an element that's, as a longtime Houstonian, we do need more Houston-based people involved too, because if we're truly trying to create that new culture and extend the olive branch, we have to definitely think about that. All right, Pat, let's get into some competitive stuff. Okay, there's an awful lot of chatter from Dynamo fans about Moira Manotas. Is there a real interest in bringing him back?
He'd be a nice one to have, wouldn't he? But I don't want to go talk about players and stuff that are under contract with other teams. He's obviously was a great player when he was here and got sold for a good chunk of change, and rightfully so. So he's someone that, listen, we're not particular in terms of where they come from. We just want to make sure they're guys that fit our system, a guy that's going to buy into the culture that we want to have in this club, and a guy that's going to, respond with Paulo's coaching. So at this stage, I don't want to comment on a player that's under contract with another club.
No problem. The only thing is he's been putting out a lot of cryptic messages. I had to ask that question. All right. So take us through kind of the roster now, where you see it, and what kind of changes you're going to try to make, and kind of the structure of how you're going to do that. Because Paulo has told us about, a big DP sign. You want to get some other things in order, it seems.
Yeah, no. I think the next step, I think we have gotten order. I think our plan in the offseason was to all get a new goalkeeper. We got Steve Clark. We wanted to get a center back that we felt could push our starting two in Teenage and Tim. We think we did that with Daniel Stairs. We're happy with that. We wanted to just get a little bit more cap space, a little bit of room. Unfortunately for Ari, we moved him out. But at the end of the day, for Ari too, Miami was a team that came after him. We didn't shop him. They actually came after him. So when that happens, I always think it's kind of a win-win for both teams. So I think Ari is excited. He's got an opportunity to go perform with a coach that is looking forward to working with him. So we've made some moves. I think there's still a few more roster moves to make in terms of whether it's trades, that sort of thing, some manipulation within the league. But having said that, with our cap that we inherited and where we're at is, ironically, to try to get those top end guys, it's better now to go for after DPs or YPS or youth player slots, or YPS is youth player slots. Because youth player slots, for example, while you could spend, whatever you want your transfer fee to be on with these kids, they're limited to their salary. And their cap hit is only $200,000. So it's a great initiative that the league has brought in and has helped us certainly control our cap. But I think those are the type of players that we need to get a couple of those guys. And then we still have space for a major DP or two, depending how we go. I don't know if we get two in the first window, but we certainly want to get one. And I think it's pretty clear what spot we're looking at. I think if you look at our roster and throw it up on the board, we're kind of missing a guy up top. So that's certainly where our target is before the season starts. We definitely, at worst case scenarios, we need to get a nine that we feel can score in our league and be successful.
Pat Onstad, Dynamo General Manager, joining us. Pat, thanks for volleying all this stuff back. This is great information for everybody. And in a prior interview that you and I did, you talked about a center forward, talked about some additional midfield players, maybe one that can take your midfield to another level.
Yeah. I think there's a couple ways to look at it. One is that's why Paul is coming in. So I have a vision of what I saw in the midfield. He has a little bit different vision than what I have, which in the end, okay, great. I want to provide him with a player that's going to fit his system. There's no point in me saying, hey, we're jamming in this guy because this is the guy's the best guy. I think he's great. And he goes, that doesn't fit in the way I want to play. So that's one of the reasons we put the brakes on a little bit, but I wouldn't say we stopped. What we've done is we've kind of teed up different positions and different profiles for positions with agents and whatnot. And at this stage now, our focus is on the nine. I'm not going to try to beat around the bush. That's our number one focus right now. We need to try to get that over line as quick as possible to get that player in and get him acclimatized to our system, to our club, to our city. That's important. So if we can do that in the next few weeks, I'm hoping at the absolute latest, the end of January, it's still going to give them a nice leeway of about 3.5-4 weeks leading into the season. That would be the hope, depending on permit issues, but that would be the hope to get this guy in market then, and then in which case he should be able to be ready to go when the season starts. That's one. And then two, like you said, a central midfield. I think Paulo and I see it fairly similarly, but we do have a few tweaks. So we may have to kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit in terms of not every guy that I probably had in my ranking are necessarily going to be his top guys, but some of the guys I said, I like them, but I don't think they're what I'm looking for. he's actually gone, oh, I kind of like those guys. And I'm like, oh, okay, I liked them too. But now that you describe it, yeah, they fit better than this guy. So it's a work in progress, but it's something, like I said, where these aren't guys that we're, you know, trying to pick up off of a waiver wire in the league. These are guys that we've got to go out and make sure we do our due diligence. Some of the forwards, for example, I've flown into a few countries already when I started back in November and in December and gone and met with some players and face to face just to make sure that these are the guys that want to be here. That's I'm sure most GMs will tell you until you meet them face to face and look them in the eye. Sometimes, you know, and I've done that with Columbus as a technical director and gone and met some players and realized this guy has no interest really in coming here. He just thinks it's a payday. And then in which case you scratch him off. But then when you meet a guy and you know, and you have it's almost kind of like it was with Paulo in terms of your first meeting, within the first 10 minutes, you're like, okay, this guy's all in. And we have some guys like those are the type of players that we want here that want to be in Houston, want to be in MLS, want to turn this team around, want to be part of this project. So that's what we're looking for. And I think we're well on our way. We're pretty excited about it.
Pat, how do you feel about the wide game, the wide areas of your team, which obviously, as we all know, is so important in the modern game?
Yeah, I mean, Fafa had a fantastic year. If he does that again, that would be terrific. And if he does that again, then I'm sure his agent will come knocking and we'll start talking. So we're going to have to if he can do it again. And that would be great. And I think he's the type of guy that has that mindset that he's got a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove to people that he can do it again. And we're excited about the way he plays. He presses, he works hard. That's what Paulo wants. That's what I want is a guy that's going to put the work in for the group, but at the same token, can still score goals. Corey Baird obviously came in and unfortunately got off to a terrible start here, just on a physical standpoint, got injured right off the bat and never really got going. He's a guy that's had success in our league. Is he an upper echelon technical guy? No, but is he a guy that works hard and gets in the box from his grit and his work rate? Absolutely. He's a successful guy. I think we could get deeper in wide guys? Yeah. Griffin Dorsey is a hard worker, good guy that can help. But I think just saying those three names is good, but I think we need more. So we need to go look and try to get a few more wide guys, I think, and hopefully an upper echelon guy that'll push everybody and see where that goes. But yeah, those are the three spots. You said attacking spots, say nine, then a central midfielder, and then a wide guy as well.
And then real quick, your outside backs, is that an area you're looking at very closely? Because again,
yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm happy with where we're at. I know I'm sure there's some of the guys would have liked to have better seasons in the sense that, but we're still working on that. I think they're committed to the club. The one thing I would say about our back line, you know, man for man, is that every one of those guys is 100% committed to the club. And you can't ask for a lot more than that. Sometimes you have guys when they're, you know, they got one foot out the door, they're not happy here, I thought it was a great season. This is fine. I don't mind not making the playoffs. But to a man, pretty much everyone's like, listen, this has got to change. We got to get better. And I want to be part of this. This is what I want to be a part of. So we're excited. We want to give them opportunities. I'm sure some fans are probably wondering what. But at the end of the day, you have a priority and a list of guys that you have to go after and a priority in terms of the positions that you're going after. If you just randomly start picking guys and going here and there, the next thing you know, you'll be up against the cap and you won't really be able to solve the bigger problems that you have. So I don't think there's a roster in our league that is perfect. I think everybody wants to try to tweak things and I'm sure we're no different, whether we're winning championships or not. We'll always want to try to improve our team. And that's my job.
Exceptional stuff, Pat. Pat Onstad joining us. So when you look at this roster, and I think you said something very important, and even for me, us on the outside, we don't understand all the things that are moving in the background. You may get off this interview in a second here and have a whole nother thing to deal with that might have changed one of your answers here. Who knows? But
yeah, maybe.
But honestly, it is all moving at once. But there is a part of you guys that have to retain a certain amount of these players, and you have to have the feeling, right, you and Paulo, that you can get more out of certain people.
Yeah, I think Paulo hit it in the press conference, right? That was one of the things that is actually one of the things we talked about before going in, is saying, you know, he said, is there anything that you should mention? I said, I think it's important to get out there and say this is a fresh start for everybody. And I do think it's important. There are players in our locker room that are unsure of where they sit and where they stand. And what I would say is Paulo is very open-minded. And I think I mentioned this before, but one of the things when I talked to Peter Vermees about him, he said, I said, describe him if you could, like in one or two words. And he goes, he's collaborative. He's a guy that wants information. He's open-minded. So I think that's important for him to get that out there, to tell the players, like, listen, I'm new. I'm going to get to know you. I don't know you that well other than watching on film. And there are some players he's come in here and said, I think the way I play, I think that player will help. I could suit my system a little bit better, and vice versa too. There's going to be guys who have had good runs here, and at times they may not fit into a system. That's the reality. But the nice thing is that everybody's starting on a fresh slate, and everybody's got everything to prove. So I'm hoping, you know, the idea is you don't change coaches with the hope that, you know, you maintain the status quo. You hope that it brings new life to the group. You hope that it can push everybody forward, and that the coach is able to get more out of the, you know, as many players as possible than the last coach did. I mean, that's the whole purpose on it. And I would say with Paulo, you know, we believe in him. He's a high potential coach, in our opinion. The other thing I was going to touch on a little bit is, I think all coaches have to start somewhere. And Paulo kind of touched on that in his press conference. You know, Greg Vanney, Jim Curtin, I'm trying to think of guy Peter Vermees, for example. These guys all started in the academy, and these guys all started with young kids. And I touched on that a little bit, but I think it's really important. These guys have got reps before. I think if it's a guy that steps off the field as a player and then becomes a head coach, it gets tricky. That's a lot. I think our league has kind of gone away from those type of guys, the learning on the job. I think those guys are few. I don't see many of those guys that happening anymore in our league.
No, I think that's why I've always been impressed with you and Craig and the guys that I got to know here in Houston, is just how quickly you guys got into the work. It probably wasn't easy to figure it all out, but you got there. I had been there at one point, and it ended up being coaching, because that was really your only option. You wanted to be in soccer. So a lot of respect to you personally for all the work you've done to get to this point. So it's exciting. What's your biggest, if you look at Paulo right now, what do you think his biggest challenge will be making this step up?
For me, it's to surround him with good people. You know, and we can touch on it here a little bit. We're far down the line with a couple of coaches that we hope that will kind of be guys that will support him. I think when people hear the name, certainly one of the names, I think people will be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But what I would say is, we also want to make sure that like one of the coaches that will work with Paulo together to hire him. But I think he has. I'm trying to think of the best word to say, but he needs help supporting him. And how do we get his message across in terms of the way we want to play? How do we coach it? How do we teach it? And so for a lot of teams, what they do is they'll hire a director of methodology, so to speak, or he's essentially an assistant coach, but somebody who's got experience in saying, okay, I want to work on my wingers running behind the line. How do I train them? And there's different, and there's lots of ways to do it. And a lot of coaches and follows, I'm sure he's got lots of ideas, but sometimes it doesn't get through with the group. And so then you have to go, how can I manipulate this to get through to my group? And there's some of these coaches, Nico Estevez, who's gone to Dallas, that was his strength. And one of his things was, he was a director of methodology, and he would have 9 different exercises to teach the same topic, you know, and he'd be able to eventually you find which is the right one for your group. So if you can find a coach like that, that can help a young coach, you know, a high potential young coach get that. I think that really helps. So I think that's, if you said there's one area, I think that's an area that would really help him on the training pitch. But in terms of gamesmanship and adjustments on the fly, he's got his staff is well-rounded to be able to do that, and understanding the league, I think it'll be good.
Pat Onstad joining us. Pat, we're going to wrap it up here because you've given me more than enough time, and we really thank you for that. Thanks for being so candid, by the way, because I think this is tremendous information for the fan base. I did want to not end the interview without talking about Steve Clark, because he's number one. He's a great interview. He's a great goalkeeper. He's got a little eccentric nature to him. I think he could be somebody that, you know, people really take to because of the way he plays goal, and might be different than the way you did during your outstanding
career. Oh yeah, he and I were night and day. I mean, we often joked about it when I coached him up in Columbus. But what I would say is, he is a fan. Everywhere he goes, he's a fan favorite. And part of it is just his personality. He's a loving character. He cares about his teammates. He cares about the staff. He cares about the fans. He cares about winning. He's one of the most competitive human beings. He really downplayed it in your interview. He didn't talk about it. But he's one of the most competitive human beings I've ever met in my life. Never mind a soccer player. It's phenomenal, his level of competitiveness. I mean, he'll fight you over a coffee bean, let alone anything else. So he's ready to go. But he does play the game differently in goal. And I think he's more of a modern goalkeeper than I ever would be. And I'm going to drag your time out here. But when I worked for Greg Berhalter, he wanted to play out of the back. Well, for me, I was more Houston Dynamo fans remember how far I kicked the ball than I would actually stop shot. So would punt the ball. So I never played out of the back, but Greg would come to me as I was working on that. For me, it was new. So I had to learn how to coach it. I had to watch other coaches and figure out training sessions and wish I had my own goalkeeper director methodology to help me out with that. But figuring it out and working with Steve was great because he was so good with the ball at his feet and so calm and able to break lines with passes, which, you know, that's foreign. So Greg goes, well, Pat, what would you do if you were my goalie? What would you do? I go, Greg, I'd walk in and say, I love what you're doing here. It's unbelievable, but you might as well trade me now because there's no chance I could do this. So it takes a lot of courage, you know, like for Steve, it takes a lot of courage to play that way. And you are, unfortunately, if you're playing out of the back, you know, tell me how many center backs have given up goals when they've passed it square and it's got picked off or they got it caught in their feet. And unfortunately, the same thing will happen to goalkeepers too. But it's the ability to bounce back and do it is phenomenal. And Steve's mindset is tremendous. I mean, top to be able to do that in the way he plays the game. He's such a calming influence in the back. When you're under pressure as a center back, knowing you always have an outlet and that will still keep the ball for you, it's phenomenal. So I'm excited to get him in here. I think for us in our locker room, he'll be a much needed boost of adrenaline in there. But I think people will gravitate towards him. He's a fantastic personality.
Pat, thanks so much for all the time. Let's let you get a break here. It's been a heck of a time for you. I know you've been moving back down here, scouting, you name it. You've done it. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. Thanks for being so candid too, because this is radio gold here, your transparency. Thank
you.
And
I don't know any other way. I'm sorry. There's going to be times and moments this season I know are going to be hard, and we'll still have the same conversation. Hopefully you challenge me as well. You don't have to always throw me a softball, but at the end of the day, it's who I am. I think maybe to a fault at times, probably a little too open at times, but I just believe in that transparency. And I think, and I'll go back to it again. You want to work together with people. If they don't know what you're thinking, and that includes the fans, that includes the media, if they don't have an idea of what you're thinking, it makes it difficult. So, you know, when I say things, I want people, I know it's what I believe in. And if I don't attain that, I want people to hold me accountable. Otherwise, I don't think we grow.
I think it's what the doctor ordered down here, Pat. You're the perfect guy for it. Thank you so much for coming on.
All right, Glenn. Thank you.
Well, if you're a Houston Dynamo fan, it was started with Todd Ramos being a lot more transparent and open. Now it's moved to the general manager position with Pat Onstad. You're going to get a lot of honest transparency this year. That is my feeling from the Dynamo general manager, Pat Onstad, and also from the head coach, Paulo Nagamura. And that is a big shift. That is how you also try to change the culture of an organization. So big thank you there to Pat. Great stuff there for Dynamo fans and for soccer fans in general. That does it tonight. Producer extraordinaire, Andrew Carlson, we thank him. Also, all of our sponsors, including our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, Advantage BMW Midtown, Daesh Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, FM Kitchen and Bar, Cactus Music, Hugh O'Connor's. We thank all of you. Please support them. Please follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Soccer Matters GD or at Glenn Davis Soc. Get over to our Facebook page, Soccer Matters. Without you, we don't make it happen. Until next Wednesday, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night. And remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.